Brothers and sisters, we want to first thank you for taking the time to come out here in Harlem this afternoon to this unity rally. But I think before we go into our unity rally, we should give another round of applause first to the steel band that played earlier. And to Gus Dinizulu and his African drummers and dancers who just finished. They made us feel right at home. Not down home, but back home. The only time you feel, or the only time you remember down home is when you see a rope. That's the number one memory that we attach to down home. But back home, our people are happy. A happy people. We love to sing and dance. We love to be in unity and harmony. We love to do things together. This is the African way. This is our way. We never knew anything about disunity and inharmony until we were kidnapped by the white man and brought here to America, divided against each other, and then used against each other. But we want to welcome you to our rally, our unity rally, for a united black front, to unite all factions of our people, to unite every one of the 20 million so-called Negroes into one group. And you'll notice, whenever the white man thinks that we're going to call a rally to knock our own kind, you see him jammed out here. He wants to hear us say something against King or against Bunch or against Farmer, against someone of our own kind. He jams out here. But when you call a rally for black people to unite, let's get together, you don't see too many white folks then. They don't like black people to get together in unity and harmony. As long as you and I are going to attack each other or talk about each other or heap scorn and ridicule upon each other, the white man gets his kick. But when he knows that we're going to come together in unity and harmony, he won't get his kick. He will get kicked. So in calling this unity rally, we invited Dr. Adam Clayton Powell, Dr. Roy Wilkins, Dr. Whitney Young, Dr. James Farmer, Dr. Edward Davis, the Right Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Dr. Gardner C. Taylor, Dr. Ralph Bunch, Dr. A. Philip Randolph, Professor James Lawson, and Dr. James Foreman. We invited all these so-called Negro doctors to come out and, since they are doctors, give their analysis, their diagnosis of the ailments that our people are afflicted with here in America. And after giving their diagnosis to this vast audience here in Harlem, then we wanted them to offer their solution. We told them that if they came out, they could give you and me, us here in Harlem, some idea of what we can do to solve our own problem. Instead of always running downtown to the white man, telling him what's wrong, and begging him for his crumbs, we wanted to get together here in Harlem and analyze our own problem and see what we could do ourselves to solve our problem. Because as long as we sit around here waiting for some blue-eyed white man to undo what he himself is guilty of doing, we'll be another 1,000 years waiting for a solution to the race problem. Our problem has to be solved by us. We have to do it ourselves. Our condition has to be corrected ourselves. No white man can do it for us. No white man will do it for us. No white man wants to do it for us. No white man even has the nature to do it for us. So we sent them the letter, pointing out to them that if capitalistic Kennedy and communistic Khrushchev can find something in common on which the former United White Front, despite their tremendous ideological differences, then it's time for the so-called Negro leaders to submerge all of our trivial minor differences in order to seek a common solution to a common problem posed by a common enemy to our people by forming a United Black Front. If the American government, which is a white government, and the Russian government, which is a white government, can get together and form a United White Front, and that's all they form, a United White Front, then it is time for you and me, time for us, to forget our little differences and in some way try to find how we can form a United Black Front. When you see the white man forming a United White Front, he's forming that front against a common enemy, an enemy that's a common enemy to them. And that enemy is not considered by them as white. Likewise with us. When you see you and I getting together, it is because we have begun to realize that we have a common enemy. And the only time we'll be able to come together with a common objective and a common goal is when we first develop a common motive. And that motive is best developed by recognizing the common enemy. And that common enemy is the white man. I say that common enemy is the white man. The white man is your enemy, whether you are a Baptist, whether you are a Methodist, whether you are a Episcopalian, or whether you're a Muslim, or whether you're a Mason, or whether you're an elf. If you find yourself running into opposition when you're looking for freedom, justice, and equality, or some kind of right, you have to agree, always the one who opposes your right is the white man. Some old blue-eyed, blonde-haired, bad-smelling white man. And he doesn't like you any better than he likes me. Some of you are dumb enough to think that he makes a distinction, that he makes a difference, but in his eyesight, there's no difference. When he puts his club upside your head, he doesn't care whether you're a Baptist, a Methodist, but he does want to know whether or not you're a Muslim. Because he knows if you're a Baptist or a Methodist, you're going to turn the other cheek. You're going to try and love your enemy. You're going to pray for them that despitefully use you. So he's not worried about you. But he knows if you're a Muslim, you're not going to turn the other cheek. If you pray for him, you pray that God kills him, or God helps you to kill him. That's the only kind of prayer you pray. So since you and I can realize we're all in the same boat, catching the same hell from the same man, it's time for you and me to unite, to get together and get this big white stink off our back. You got a bad habit. You're hooked and don't know it. You got what's known as white disease. You think you can't get along without the white man. You think you can't get some clothes without the white man. You think you can't get a house without the white man. You think you can't even get a job without the white man. You're worse than a man who thinks he can't get along without heroin. You're worse than the man who thinks he can't get along without morphine. You're worse than the junkie. You're in worse shape than the junkie because the junkie only has a little monkey on his back and you're running around with a big white ape named Uncle Sam on your back. So I wrote a letter inviting Dr. King and Dr. Blunt and the others to come out to this unity rally. I have a card here from Dr. King's secretary saying, "Dear Mr. X, Dr. King is out of the city at this time and will be away for about 2 weeks. Your letter of recent date will be brought to his attention for a reply immediately on his return to Atlanta. We are happy to hear from Dr. King." Also, we had another reply from James Farmer, who said, "Dear Minister Malcolm, thank you very much for your kind invitation to participate in the rally you are sponsoring Saturday, August the 10th. We are in wholehearted agreement with your views that Negroes struggling for equal rights must not allow themselves to be divided. I deeply regret that a previous commitment forces me to be in Los Angeles on that day, and it will, therefore, be impossible for me to address your rally. Please express to the gathered throng the determination of CORE and myself to continue to fight for freedom in our country." We're glad to hear from Dr. Gene Farmer, who's busy out in Los Angeles fighting the blue-eyed white men. That's who he's fighting. Also, we got a letter in reply from Dr. Ralph Funch, or rather from his secretary. "Dear Malcolm X, in the absence of Mr. Bunch, who was in Europe, I acknowledge the receipt of your letter of August the 1st, inviting him to attend the Muslim rally on Saturday, August the 10th, at 116th Street and Lenox Avenue, New York. Unhappily, Mr. Bunch will not be able to attend the rally, since he is not due back in New York until the end of this month. Your letter will, of course, be placed before him at that time. We're happy to hear from Dr. Bunch's secretary. We're sorry that he's tied up in business abroad while there's so much urgent business here in this country. And we do think that if he can settle differences between the opposing factions in the Middle East and in the Congo, he should be able to mediate down in Mississippi or Alabama or maybe here in New York City between you and some of these northern crackers." We also sent a letter to Whitney M. Young, the executive director of the Urban League, who said, "Dear Minister Malcolm, I appreciate very much your invitation to speak at your rally on Saturday, August the 10th, as well as the general spirit of your remarks, urging the need for cooperation where possible. I deeply regret that a commitment made several months ago will find me out of the city on that date and therefore unable to participate in the rally." All of them busy. Made me feel like that man Jesus was talking about who set a dinner and invited all the big shots, the lawyers and the doctors and what have you. And they all sent him back a message and said, well, the lawyer said he had a client, the doctor had a patient, the real estate man had too much property. They were all too busy to attend that feast. So Jesus said to the man, said, well, go out in the alley, in the highway and in the byway and get those people. They're not too busy. They don't have any job, don't have too much home, and they're not hooked up to the white man, and they don't have to ask his permission if he can come. So they always come out. Another letter from James Foreman of SNCC. SNCC is one of the more recently formed civil rights organization. "Dear Malcolm X, thank you for your invitation to attend the rally in New York, August the 10th. Unfortunately, I will be on the West Coast. Couldn't still be in the country and be any farther away than the West Coast. Unfortunately, I will be on the West Coast and will not be able to be present. I would like to have a representative present from SNCC and will forward your invitation to Cortland Cox, a member of our staff who is in New York working on the Washington March. You can expect to hear from him. I share your concern for the possible explosion of the present racial crisis. Thank you for this effort at working toward a constructive handling of the tensions. James Foreman, Executive Secretary of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee." This is a very nice letter from him, and I thank him for taking the time to write, and he did, or at least his representative was supposed to be here today. If he's not here, he will be here. Also, a telegram, well, I read you this letter first, from our brother, Roy Wilson. He wrote the longest letter, and it's a good letter. "Dear Minister Malcolm X, I acknowledge your courteous letter of August the 1st with its kind invitation to me to speak at an outdoor rally on Saturday, August the 10th, and to give an analysis of the present race problem and the solution proposed by my organization. I regret that I will not be able to be present because of a commitment on the West Coast for that weekend. All of us here are so occupied with the campaign for the enactment of civil rights legislation in Congress and with the August 28th march in Washington, D.C., that I find no staff member available to respond to your invitation. It is my feeling that the NAACP analysis of the race problem is very well known, and the solution urged by it is also well known, having been publicized continuously for many, many years. I note and appreciate your assurance that this will be a rally for the statement of views and not one for debating, arguing, criticizing, or condemning, and that you as moderator guarantee order and courtesy for all speakers. I repeat that I appreciate this assurance, and in return I wish to state that I have never been apprehensive about appearing at a meeting sponsored by the Muslims. I think this is good for Roy Wilkins to say this. I repeat, I wish to state that I have never been apprehensive about appearing at a meeting sponsored by the Muslims, for in all my contacts with you and your followers, I have met only courtesy and consideration. This is Roy Wilkins. I am afraid I cannot say the same for some outdoor rallies held in New York City, in Holland, and elsewhere, in which the Muslims were not the sponsors and not responsible for order. It happens that my schedule of out-of-town trips is so heavy throughout the year that I have not been able to be present at Muslim-sponsored rallies, but I wish to assure you that my absence is in no sense due to any fear that the host Muslims will be anything except fair and hospitable. Very sincerely, yours, Roy Wilson. That's Brother Roy. I think it's nice of him to say that. And when a lot of these white liberals hear that he said it, they're going to get on me. If they are, they're going to start calling him Roy X. Here's the last reply we received from A. Philip Randolph. A wire. Greatly regret that a previous long-standing commitment prevents my participation in your meeting Saturday, August the 10th. A. Philip Randolph. We're very happy to hear from him, too. We know he's busy. He's the one who's supposed to be over this march that the so-called Negroes are supposed to be making on Washington in a couple of weeks. And they're all of the civil rights leaders are very wrapped up in that march, in preparation for that march. And I think that most of the administration and people in Washington are greatly concerned. They would be more concerned if they didn't think they had everything under control. Where's that cartoon? Bring it around here, brother. An artist's conception of the march. It points out how, when the masses of black people originally stated that they were going to march on Washington, the government was shook up. It was afraid. All of the senators and the congressmen and the president, everybody down there, they said, we don't want all the Negroes coming down here. They'll explode. And they got all the Negro leaders in to try and stop the march, you probably read about, try and get them to call it off. And the Negro leaders began to tell them, we can't call this thing off. These are our people are stirred up. They're about to explode. If you don't let them blow you up, they'll blow us up. Why, some of the preachers were talking about going out to Idlewild Airport and sitting on the runway so the planes couldn't land, and driving out here on the parkway and blocking up the World's Fair construction. They were talking way out of their head. And the white man was shook up. And when he found out that he couldn't stop it, he joined it. That's what he always does. When he can't stop you, he joins you. And when he joins you, you're not going to go in the same direction you originally were headed in. So they put out, I think, $800,000 to give these Negroes. $800,000, that's more than a half a million dollars to help finance the march on Washington, and promised them, I think, $700 million more after it was all over. This is not a secret. Everybody is talking about this. This is what they actually did. And then after they felt down there that they had everything under control, The man you see sitting in that chair over there, he said, come on, I think all you Negroes should come. So he figured he had everything under control. And they think right now they got that thing under control. But you can't control any 100,000 black people nowadays. You can't find 100 nonviolent black people. And you can't find 100 people who still love the white man. Not anymore. Our people are waking up. There'll be no skullduggery, no flim-flam, no compromise, no sellout, no control show, no false show. No, we need either this or that. This or that. If you're wrong, you're wrong, and if you're right, you're right. And if that man, if the people down there are right, they don't have anything to worry about. But if they're wrong, they should be worrying. Because God is against ugly. God doesn't like ugly. When you get real ugly, God chastises. And he chastises you in a way that you least expect it. If he doesn't strike you, he'll strike your children.
Right.
He'll strike at you through the ones you love the most. He'll make your babies be born dead. And it will serve you right. For our unity rally here today with a few introductory remarks before bringing forth those of our speakers who have showed up. America is faced with her greatest crisis since the Civil War. Wherever we look today, whether it's south, north, east, or west, we see increasing race tensions. We see the increase of racial animosity, racial hostility, and outright racial hatred. We see masses of black people who have lost all confidence in the false promises of hypocritical white politicians. We see masses of black people who are thoroughly fed up with the deceit of white so-called liberals. White liberals who have posed as our friends. White liberals who have been eager to point out what the white man in the South has been doing to us, while they themselves here in the North are doing the same thing. They have been making a great fuss over the South, only to blind us to what is happening here in the North. And now that the eyes of America's 20 million blacks can easily see that this white fox here in the North is even more cruel and vicious than the white wolf in the South. The southern wolves always let you know where you stand. But these northern foxes pose as white liberals. They pose as your friend, pose as your benefactor, pose as your employer. They pose as your landlord. They pose as the neighborhood merchant. They pose as your lawyer trying to help you. They infiltrate all your organizations. And in this manner, by joining you, they strangle your militant efforts toward freedom, toward justice, and toward equality. They use integration for infiltration. Throughout America, here in the North as well as the South, masses of black people are demonstrating against the oppression and exploitation of the white man. Our people have lost all fear of the white man. They have ceased trying to waste their love on the white man, and they have ceased turning their nonviolent cheek to the violent white man. And because of this new, fearless, more militant attitude on the part of our people, we see the increase of violence and bloodshed between the white oppressor and the oppressed, between the white exploiter and the exploited, between the white slave master and his 20 million ex-slaves. And where will all of this end? America is faced with her worst domestic crisis since the Civil War, or since the Revolutionary War. For America now faces a race war. A race war is worse than a Revolutionary War. A race war is worse than a Civil War. A race war is a war in which no holds are barred. A race war is a war in which children are destroyed. in which children are mutilated, in which children face the same destructive wrath that grown-ups face. The race or race war is the worst war that you can conceive. And this war, race war, that is coming upon the head of the white man is something that he is bringing down upon himself. The entire country is on the verge of erupting into racial violence and bloodshed. Simply because 20 million ex-slaves are demanding freedom, justice, and equality here in America from their former slave master. 20 million so-called Negroes, second-class citizens, seeking human dignity, seeking human rights, seeking the right to live in dignity as a human being. And rather than give genuine respect and recognition to your cry for human rights, the American white man answers your nonviolence with violence. He answers your prayers and your freedom songs with false promises, deceitful maneuvers, and outright bloodshed. According to what we are taught from the white man's textbooks and his school, the Revolutionary War and the Civil War were two wars fought on American soil, supposedly for freedom and democracy. But that these two wars were really for the freedom and human dignity of all men, why are 20 million of our people still confined here in America and enslaved by second-class citizenship? Something is wrong. The truth is that the Revolutionary War was fought on American soil to free the American white man from the English white man. The Revolutionary War was never fought to provide freedom and democracy in this white country for the black man. Our people remain slaves here in America even after the Declaration of Independence was signed. In fact, most of the white founding fathers who signed the Declaration of Independence were nothing but slave owners themselves. It is sheer hypocrisy, sheer ignorance, sheer insanity for our people here in America to celebrate the 4th of July as Independence Day, while white America still denies us first-class citizenship that goes with an independent people. And it is nothing but hypocrisy for the American white man to pretend that the Revolutionary War was truly a war of independence as long as 20 million black people here in America are denied the privileges of an independent people. Don't let the white man fool you. Don't let the white man smile at you and lull you to sleep. Behind that smile is a vicious heart. Behind those teeth is an animal-like beast who doesn't have it within him to want for you what he wants for himself and his own kind. Don't let that man fool you. When you look at that man, you're supposed to see him for exactly what he is. And if you want to know what he is, examine his deeds. Forget his words. He got a whole lot of pretty sounding words. Watch his deeds. His deeds are like the deeds of a snake, the deeds of a serpent, the deeds of a dragon, the deeds of a reptile, the deeds of a beast. Why, nothing but a race of beasts would take dogs and stick them on little black babies. Nothing but a race of beasts will stick dogs on black children and black women. Nothing but a race of beasts. And it is for these, and it is these beasts today that's causing the wrath of God to come down upon the head of the white man. And when you see him as he is and see how much hell he's pitching, you're out of his mind to want to be with him. You're out of your mind to want to integrate with him. And you are really out of your mind if you take time to forgive him and ask God to have mercy on him. No, ask God to judge him. Ask God to do unto him as he has done unto you. He has caused your babies to suffer, and God to heap suffering upon his babies.
He has caused your women to suffer. Ask God to heap suffering on his women. He has caused all of our people to suffer. You can't deny this. You may not like my saying it, but you can't deny it. Why, you got scars and knots on your head from the top of your head to the bottom of your feet. And every one of those scars is evidence against the American white man and his inhumanity to man. The Civil War was also fought on this continent. Not to free the black slaves, as is commonly taught in the white man's school, but the Civil War was actually fought to preserve the Union, preserve this country, keep it intact for white people. It wasn't fought to set you free. It wasn't fought to give you some kind of emancipation. It wasn't fought to make you a citizen. It wasn't fought to give you civil rights. It wasn't fought because they respected you and loved you as a human being. It was fought out of greed. It was fought out of selfishness. It was fought to keep this country intact for their own white selves. In essence, this only means that the American white man fought the Revolutionary War to get this country for himself. And he then fought the Civil War to keep this country intact for himself. And today, he will now fight a race war to keep from having to share this white country on an equal basis with anyone else but his white self, especially on an equal basis with his 20 million former slaves. So again, I ask, what will all of these demonstrations end? And who dares to say that our people are not justified by demonstrating their resentment over the injustice and mistreatment that our people have suffered these 400 years at the hands of this cruel, inhuman American white man? We have nothing to lose but our chances. We have nothing to lose but the hell we experience. Than your grandfather 100 years ago.